Okay, so last week we began to talk about the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan, and we saw that it is a complex mitzvah, that it's a mitzvah which has a mysterious role in today's world, where we generally don't look to birds' nests in order to feed ourselves, and we get our eggs from a store. What role exactly does this mitzvah play in our lives? And it's connected to a fundamental question of what's the mitzvah about. And we saw that there is a tension here, that on the one hand, just to try to speculate what the purpose of the mitzvah is, there is a divergence of opinions, that there is the idea that it's based on rachmanis, that it seems to be an act of compassion to not take the children in front of the mother, l'sikacha eima l'bonim, and not to take the mother together with the children, whether that's the focus, or not to take the mother in front of the children. And that, therefore, it's a spirit, like the Ramban and Rambam mentioned, of Rachmanis, for example, comparable to the prohibition of Osoviet Beno, just like we don't shecht a parent and a child, a mother and a child on the same day, so too we don't take the mother bird and the children together. So on the one hand, you have those who see it as a Rachmanis focus, and at the same time, there are others, such as the Vilna Gaon, who saw it in a different category as actually being less pleasant and something a little more painful for the animal, and yet apparently necessary nonetheless. And together with that, what added to the tension is the fact that the Mishnah in Brachos seems to push us away from associating Rachmanis with this mitzvah and telling us that somebody who, in the context of Tefillah, says, Al Kantipur Yagiyu Rachmecha, Mishatkin Oso, that we would silence such a person. It's not 100% clear what the issue is. The Gemara gives two perspectives. Either that you're matal kinah b'vayis v'reishis, somehow you are arousing jealousy among creation, or because you are claiming that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvos are about Rachmanis, or a function of Rachmanis, when really they are gezeros, whatever that means. So we have a tension within the possible theories as to the mitzvah, and the whole question of having a theory at all, essentially, when the Gemara and the Mishnah has this phrase, is something which also makes it even more complex. And then, on top of that, we have the very fundamental question of how do we relate to this mitzvah in the era of the grocery store? If we're not taking eggs from nests normally, so do we have any participation in this mitzvah? Is this a mitzvah that's only there if you're interested in taking the animals, if you're interested in taking the children, or is it something that exists in of itself? And we saw that this was a machlokas achronim, bringing various rayas from the Rishonim. And we started to discuss how, for example, the Chacham Tzvi and the Chavos Yoyer and a number of others were on the position that this is something that one has to do regardless. And among the sources was the Gemara in Chulin that says that, oh, ki kare, that only if you should stumble upon a nest, so you might have thought without that that you have to go looking for it. So the assumption that maybe you would have had to go looking for it, that was brought by the Chavos Yoyer as a proof that you see it must be a chiyuv. Because if it's something that you only have to do if you want to, so then clearly you don't have to go looking for it. So it must be that, no, when you find it, you have to do it. And you would have thought that maybe you have to go looking for it. And the message is that, no, you don't have to go looking for it, but if you find it, you do have to do it. Now, there are many objections to this proof, such as those brought by Rav Asher Weiss and others, both earlier and later. Many approaches you could take. Rav Asher had explained that presumably it was just trying to give it some kind of a context as to whether it's even valuable to do without taking the eggs, whether it's even any kind of a mitzvah kiyumis, because to say that you should go looking for it, so then clearly that it's going to be a difficult thing to conceptualize. Are you obligated to spend all day looking for it? How often are you obligated to look for it? How often would you be obligated to do this mitzvah? So it doesn't seem like that was really the Havamina. It seems like it was simply considering the question of whether there is anything to consider as far as that's concerned. Also, there are those who explain, like the Dvar Avram, that it's a simple Havamina Namaskana, that maybe the Gemara was considering that this is something that has its own chiyuv, regardless of taking the birds, taking the younger birds. But the maskana is that no. So therefore, in practice, you don't have that kind of a perspective on the mitzvah, and you only have the chiyuv if you are looking to take the children. And that gets into these broader questions of how much meaning do you put into a havamina. When the Gemara says, well, maybe it's this, but then we know that it's actually not. So how much do we read into the possibility? The whole point of the Gemara is to tell us it's not the conclusion, so that maybe we shouldn't put any weight on what it was considering. That's a broader question in general. But that source was a major part of the discussion. And we also saw that the Chavos Yair also brought in a Zohar, that the Zohar was of the opinion, or the Zohar expresses the perspective, that the purpose of Shiluach HaKan is to be Me'orah Rachamim, is to evoke divine compassion when the bird is flitting around. So too, there is a mercy that gets evoked because of that. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is moved to worry about, so to speak, kaviyachol, about his children in Galus. And that provoked the question, because if that's the case, then it sounds like this is only a Galus mitzvah. A mitzvah in the Torah is supposed to refer to the exile from the Beis HaMikdash. That's difficult to maintain. How exactly do we see that, especially when the Mishnah tells us specifically that this mitzvah applies bein b'fnei habayis, shein bein shelo b'fnei habayis, that the Mishnah goes out of the way to tell us this applies when there is a Beis HaMikdash. So that bazaar itself alludes to a little bit, but how much weight to take upon that as an interpretation was a part of the difficulty. Okay, so that's a lot of what we set up last time. So let's try to take it from there. So to further consider the question of this issue, the Chassam Sofer, who we mentioned, ultimately concludes that there is no individual mitzvah to send away the mother if you're not interested in the children. And in fact, it's a problem of achzarius. It's a problem of cruelty. So the Chassam Sofer notes that this could be a machlokas in the Gemara in another sense, that the Gemara also has a machlokas with Yehuda and Chachamim as to whether to look at this as a lav hanitak la'aseh. Are we looking at the obligation of shalech to shalach et ha'ayim, the idea that you should send the mother away as a positive mitzvah? So is that a positive mitzvah that is there only to fix a problem? Or is it there independently? So the indication that it might be there independently is the fact that it's first. Right? Normally the idea of a lav hanitak la'aseh is that you have a prohibition, and you should have been chayiv malchus, let's say, for violating that prohibition. But the Torah also gives you a remedy. The Torah tells you how to fix it. So, for example, when it comes to stealing, if you steal, so you're in violation of the Torah prohibition, but there's no malchus for stealing, because we also have the correlating principle of a positive mitzvah to return the stolen object. So that's either called a lav hanita klaaseh, a lav that is connected to a positive mitzvah, whether it's something that fixes it or just kind of offsets it. But that idea of a lav hanita klaaseh means there's no malchus. So how exactly does Shiluach HaKan fit in with that? Do we say that if one would take the children where the mother is still there, so then one is in violation of a lav, but it's fixed by sending away the mother? Or do we say that no, that they can't relate to each other in that way, because the mitzvah to send away the mother and the pasuk is first, and therefore it's kind of suggesting that it's not, don't do this, and if you do, fix it this way, but it's got its own mitzvah status. So maybe that tells us something about the mitzvah. Does the mitzvah exist independently, send away the mother? Or is the mitzvah only there as a corrective to the avera, or the would-be avera, of taking away the children while the mother is still there? You hear the issue? Now it's possibly contingent. And it's interesting, we'll maybe say a little bit more about it. It's a whole discussion whether there is a bracha on this mitzvah. That many assume there is no bracha that is recited, but others felt differently. Ongoing machlokas, even in the more recent generations, the Rokeach and some of the Rishonim thought there was a mitzvah, there was a bracha associated with this mitzvah. Others assumed that there wasn't. And a part of the discussion says that Tshuva the Rashba. In general, if you want a little background on Brichos HaMitzvos, that if you ever have a question as to why a certain mitzvah doesn't have a bracha, so the most common source is the Tshuva Sarashba. The Tshuva Sarashba in Chelek Aleph and Simen Yitzchetz goes through the whole question of various mitzvahs that don't have brachos and why that would be the case. And in one of his most famous examples, he talks about staka. He says there that you don't make a bracha on staka, it sounds like, because it's contingent on somebody else. That any mitzvah that you can't fulfill by yourself, you need somebody else to participate. So when you give staka, the recipient might reject the staka, and then you won't have a mitzvah, and then you'll be left hanging. That's what it sounds like the Rashba is saying. So part of what he discusses there is that any mitzvah that requires you to do an avera, you're also not going to make a bracha. So if you steal money, you have a mitzvah to return it. Or if you take ribbis, if you take money with interest, so then you have a mitzvah to return that. But you don't make a bracha on that mitzvah because it's a mitzvah that's only coming as a consequence of an avera. So interestingly, he includes Shiluach HaKan in that category, that there's some avera that you're fixing. So the later Sfarim point out, it's not the same. You know, if you steal money, so then that's the only way in which you're going to have a mitzvah to return the stolen money or the ribbis that you took. So those are mitzvos which only exist because you commit an avera. I can understand why a bracha doesn't seem to fit in that kind of context. But Shiluach HaKan, there isn't necessarily an avera involved. So you could come upon this nest and you send away the mother and take the children's no avera. So some suggest what the Rashba is saying is that's true. It doesn't have to be that there's an avera. But it could be, because maybe you'll do it the other way around. Maybe you'll take the children first, and then to fix it, you're going to have to send away the mother, which is its own discussion how exactly that works. And if that's the case, so then you'll have to make a bracha under those circumstances too, if it was a bracha. So because it could happen in that context, so then there's no bracha at all. Maybe that's what the Rashba is getting at. So even though the situation is not necessarily going to require that you did do an avera, it's different than returning stolen money or returning ribbis, but maybe what emerges from there is that it's something that's meant either to fix an avera afterwards or to stop an avera from happening. And therefore, it still has a negative relationship, that it's there not as a active mitzvah, but as something that's there to stop a problem, which is an interesting possibility. So that also reflects on this whole discussion. One of the proofs, the Chavis Yair actually brings to the other possibility, this is also a part of the discussion, is that the Gemara, if you had a chance to see it, the Gemara raises the question of if the Torah describes a mother on top of the children, so what if there's something in between? What if there is some kind of an interruption? What we would call in halachic terms a chatzitza, something that is interfering. So what would we say if, let's say, there are two levels of eggs, and the mother is on top of the upper one, and you want to take the bottom eggs, and you leave the eggs in the middle. So the mother is not actually touching the eggs that you are taking. Now you saw this, Gemara? So would that make a difference? So the question itself, as the Chavos Yair points out, which is against his ultimate conclusion, but it sounds like that is presuming that there is no mitzvah to take the eggs and send away the mother. Because if there were, so then why would we care if there was a chatzitza? What difference would it make? Even if you weren't interested in taking the eggs in the first place, you'd have to send away the mother. So here, just because you're interested in the lower level of the eggs, why should that change anything? So it sounds like what the Gemara is getting at is that it's only if you're interested in taking the eggs do you have this obligation. And therefore, something might interfere. Having something in between may break that link. The Chacham Sofer also discusses in his tshuva whether there would be an issue in terms of Hilchos Shabbos and the whole obligation here. So is there something that you could do on Shabbos? So what would the issues potentially be in Shiluach HaKan on Shabbos? What would you think? Yeah, Yonatan? Think your audio, is your audio off? Sounds like you're saying amazing stuff. I'm finding it very hard to disagree. Want to try typing it into the chat? That we're getting. So I already heard you. So am I doing something wrong? I tried to get maybe my sound. I think that was a problem with my sound. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was me. Sorry. Okay, just trying to blame everyone else for my problems. Yeah, I had my volume on low. I didn't realize. Okay, yes.
Maybe it would be an issue of like going to like home. Like if you're sending the bird away, it would like fly.
That's
like that, part of your.
That's an interesting question, and you're responsible for that. It's not likely to be an issue because we assume that Tchumen is Rabbana, even though theoretically there could be a Tchum at Saraisa, but that would be very far. So it's an interesting question of how likely you would be to be responsible, which would be kind of indirect, wouldn't be able to really send the bird that far. It was an interesting question whether there's a Tchum issue there. Any other possible considerations? Ari?
Maybe on one hand we could say Hosta, if it's in a private command, we should rob him. Or alternatively, perhaps if the egg was laid on Shabbos, that could be a smukta violation.
Okay, so Hosta also is hard to necessarily hold you for because you're not actually following the conditions of Hosta in terms of carrying it around. But Muksa he does consider. So even if the baby wasn't born on Shabbos, the question of just moving around an animal that's not yours has muktzah considerations. So the Chacham Sofer considers that point. Is it possibly an issue of tiltul muktzah? Or is it an issue of maybe tzot? Is there tzeda involved? And this brings up the question of what exactly is the process of sending away the mother. Is it something that you do just by flicking or just by scaring it away? Does it require any physical contact? So the Chasam Sofer assumes this was the Machlokas Rishonim. That the Rambam's language, if you got a chance to see, it was on the sources this morning, the Rambam's language is, you hold it by its legs and you send it off. Rashi doesn't sound that way, and many of the later poskim don't seem to bring the Rambam's view. And I think it's generally the way it's assumed nowadays. You don't have to actually hold the bird in order to throw it away. But it seems to be that that's where the question comes from, that if you have to actually hold it, so then maybe there is an issue of tzad, and maybe there's an issue of mukta. So that's Chasam Sofer brings up these considerations. But they're both a little bit surprising. And Rav Asher Weiss, in his piece in the Sefer on Chumash, he notes that he doesn't understand the Chasam Sofer, because it's hard to see why it should be either of these things. And on the one hand, as far as tzad is concerned, so tzad is when you are trying to hold back the animal. And here, we're doing the opposite. Here, you're trying to send away the animal. And even if you want to say like the Rambam, which is itself not apparently such a popular position, but even if you want to say like the Rambam that it's about holding it, it's about holding it for a second in order to get it to go away. So to say that any holding of the animal is going to involve tzad, it's the opposite purpose of tzad. So it's difficult to see why it should have that kind of consideration. As far as muktzah also, he says it was surprising. Because mukta is when you move something with your hands. Here, at most, you're going to hold it for a second, but you're not going to have to actually bring it somewhere else. The way a bird works is if you, usually less than touching it, will send it away. But touching it, presumably, would be the most you'd have to do, so that wouldn't really be mukta either. All right?
But surely we're referencing the part where you grab the fledgling bird or you grab the egg. Of course, if you're just shooing away the bird, that's not a problem. But what about the other component of Shlokha Khan?
So if you're taking the food that you could use, so then that wouldn't necessarily be. You're saying you mentioned that the egg itself was created that day. That was an additional component. I think he was assuming just the idea of moving around the animals that are not yours. You're not your responsibility. So that was a mukta consideration. You're saying maybe the egg itself has its own issue. And then it gets back to the question, what if you're not taking the egg? Is there any mitzvah of sending away the mother? Which is an interesting question. So then if you combine those two, so if you say that there's a mitzvah only when you're taking the eggs, and the eggs were new eggs, so then maybe you wouldn't have possibility of Shiluch HaKan. That's within a certain specific scenario. Maybe. He also brings up that according to the Zohar, and the Zohar's focus on trying to evoke divine Rachmanis, so then if that's the point, so then maybe that's a Shabbos issue. You know, Shabbos Yom Lizuk, that maybe we shouldn't be trying to bring about Rachmanis on Shabbos. That's something that we generally consider to be incompatible with Shabbos and inappropriate for Shabbos. Okay. Interesting perspective in and of itself. So when you take some of those issues and try to figure out exactly where this mitzvah fits in, there are a couple of other considerations. For example, there's also a machlokas. What if you're interested in taking the mother and not the children? Are you allowed to do that? Can you take either one without the other? Or is it just a straight-out prohibition to take the mother no matter what? You know that you're not supposed to take the mother and the children together. But what if you just want to take the mother? So there also it seems that there is a machlokas rishonim, how exactly to relate to that question. And there is a discussion about this, a sefer called Beis Matas Yoho. And the guys who were with us during the year may recall that a referred to it a number of times when talking about Shechita. The contemporary sefer is available in the library, theoretically, if the library were available, and if I would return it to the library, and if other things were in place, but theoretically, it's available in our library. But it's also available online. Very fascinating. You can find it on HebrewBooks.org. Very fascinating sefer on issues of Chulin and all kinds of creative presentations. And he has a very unusual interpretation of this mitzvah. He has his own complete perspective on it. And he suggests that how do you work out this tension? That on the one hand, you have some proofs that say there's no mitzvah unless you're taking the children. And there are many indications that that might really be the more correct interpretation. On the other hand, we have the proofs the Chavos Yair and others bring that sound like there is actually a positive mitzvah in sending away the mother. And this happened mean in the Gemara that it was something you might have to go looking for opportunities, and the fact that it's phrased as a positive mitzvah. And sometimes we have mitzvahs that come as positive and negatives together. But the negative is there clearly to strengthen the positive. Right? So, for example, when the Torah says you have to give tzedakah in Parshas Re'eh, so we're told that we have to send tzedakah, we have to give tzedakah. And at the same time, the Torah also says, don't clench your fist, don't harden your heart. So would you say tzedakah is a positive mitzvah or a negative mitzvah? Or both? What would you say? Okay, all right.
It's clearly positive, and the negative injunction just serves to reinforce the positive tradition.
Okay, I think you're correct. It's interesting you think it's clear. I mean, you're probably right. There is some discussion about it, but that's probably the most understandable way to look at it. That there the Torah says, do this and don't not do this. But it seems that one is strengthening the other. And that if I had to pick one, if I had to pick a perspective, presumably it would be the perspective of a positive mitzvah. And that the negative mitzvahs would not be treated like eating trefer, wearing shatnas. It would be treated as reinforcements of the positive mitzvah. And this is a discussion in the Achronim that sometimes you have different rules for positive mitzvahs and negative mitzvahs. Like, for example, Oseik b'mitzvah, patim in a mitzvah. Right, if somebody is involved in one mitzvah, so he's exempt from other mitzvahs. So presumably you're only exempt from positive mitzvahs. You're not exempt from negative mitzvahs. Right? If somebody's involved in one mitzvah, not allowed to eat non-kosher food during that time. So what about a mitzvah that has both a do and a don't language? So very often the language of don't is clearly there just to support the positive mitzvah. So here, this is an unusual structure, that if you want to say that it's all about don't take the children with the mother, so it sounds like really it's a negative idea, that to take the children in front of the mother is the wrong thing to do. So instead of doing that, you should send away the mother. But if that's the case, so then why is it phrased as a positive mitzvah that's there first? And what about all these indications that this is something that actually has its own inherent value? So this is a question. And he suggests that Beis Matzvio, Rabbi Hirschman is his name, that maybe what the Torah is saying is that, yes, it's true, this mitzvah does not apply if you're not interested in taking the kids. There is no value in sending away the mother without taking the chicks or the eggs. However, once you're doing that, there is still something of positive value that's happening in this mitzvah. It's not simply by sending away the mother, you save yourself from an avera. But that in the context of this mitzvah, of this avera, there's also a positive mitzvah. And this could harken back to what we saw on day one of this year, those who were with us then, that we talked about shchita. Right? You recall that when it comes to shchita, so there was the whole question whether to relate to shchita as a mitzvah or not. Because shchita, you could say, listen, nobody has to do shchita or has to be involved with shchita. You could just choose not to eat meat. But if you choose to eat meat, so then you have to have the animal shechted. So is shchita just a way to save you from the issur neveila? That without shchita you have unacceptable food? Or is it more than that? Does it have some positive value to it? And it's a positive value that you're not obligated to do independently. If you're not interested in eating meat, then it doesn't come up. But if you're interested in eating meat, so then there is a positive value to the shchita. So it could be here also that if you're not interested in taking the children, so then there's no reason to send away the mother. And as the Chassam Sofer says, in fact, it seems achzari. It seems like it's cruel to do that. You shouldn't do that. But if you are, so then once you're doing that, so then that's something that requires a appreciation for the role of the mother, and that becomes a positive mitzvah. So he essentially suggests that maybe the whole gather of the mitzvah is that you are not supposed to take the entire time. That if we assume, I think I mentioned last time, that there's a machlokas, what exactly kan refers to? Does that refer to a nest? Does that refer to the children? Does that refer to the whole environment here? So let's say for this purpose it refers to the whole environment, the mother and the children. So the din is, you're not supposed to take the whole thing. When you're getting involved in taking a bird for your own purposes, you have to leave some of it behind. And that's a part of how to relate to this whole process. And therefore, yes, that is a positive mitzvah in that context, maybe comparable to shchita. And maybe that could also explain the view in the Rishonim, that it could work the other way around also. What if you want to take the mother? And you want to send away the children? So that might also be a fulfillment in this idea of taking a part of the Khan. And he suggests a Chiddush. This is really more of an innovative concept, and you could certainly argue with this. He says that even though you're not supposed to, the way he's understanding it, you don't have to go looking for this situation. And if you're interested in, if you're not interested in taking the children, so then there's no point in sending away the mother. Right? There's no independent value in sending away the mother by itself. But he says, what if you have two choices? What if you're walking around in the forest and you see two nests, and one has the mother there and one doesn't? Does it make a difference which one to take from? So he suggests that maybe you should specifically take from the one that does have the mother there. And that to Davka only take part of the Khan, that's what the mitzvah is. And therefore, if you have the ability to do that, to only take part of something rather than all of it, because there is no mother in the second scenario, then you should have to go for the case where you are able to send away the mother. This is a chiddush. So then he goes on to say, so he says, if that's what it's about, so ultimately, what is the purpose of the mitzvah? Is it about rachmanis? Or is it about something else? So he actually favors the view that you find in the Sefer Achinuch, and the Ramban mentions also, that it's basically about the long picture, that this is a statement against extinction, that we don't want to wipe out the species, and to take two generations at once, so that is a step towards extinction. Right, if you saw the Sefer Achinuch and a few others bring up that issue. And therefore, that is what we're looking at. And that would be true even if you take the view that it's actually unsettling for the mother to be separated. But still, it's secondary to the consideration that you don't want to wipe out the whole species or contribute to the wiping out of the whole species. And therefore, to whatever extent you can preserve one generation while you're doing it, so that itself is a goal. That itself is something that is valuable. And in that context, he has a original reading on the language of the Gemara in Brachos. So if you recall, the Gemara over there, talking about the Mishnah, that you shouldn't say, Al Kantipur Yagiu Rachmecha. So he has a unique spin on how to read that Gemara, how to read what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, what's the issue? All right, two possible issues. One issue is, Shematil Kina B'maisa Bereshis, that you're going to provoke jealousy among creation, or that you are making a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvot into a rachamim. So he reads both of those in his own way. He says that if the issue is extinction, so that's what we are considering, that's what's going on here. That basically, the whole new reading, he says the assumption is that maybe it's cruel to separate the mother from the child, or maybe at least in the moment it's painful for the mother to be separated from the child. And maybe the person who is saying, Al Kantipur Yagiu Rachmecha, he's saying animal rights advocacy. He's saying, God, have mercy on the animals. Why are you telling us to separate the mother from the child? Very different reading than we usually see this Gemara. So to that we say, but the alternative is that we are contributing to the extinction of the animal. So therefore, that's the Gemara's response, that you'll cause bad feelings among creation. If you're going to cause extinction of a species, that's going to cause bad feelings among creation. That's how I read. That's what's Matul Kina of my separations. And that's where there is a misguided appeal to Rachmanis, because ultimately, in the long term, to contribute to the extinction of the species, that's where there is a greater concern. Which sounds like it's talking more about long-term Rachmanis versus short-term Rachmanis. Now, clearly, you're not going to be responsible for the extinction of the species one way or another here. So it seems like either way, whether you see it about Rachmanis or you see it about the long-term extinction consideration, it's not so much about the impact that you're actually going to have, but it's about a sensitivity, that you should have a recognition that you shouldn't act cruelly or that you shouldn't act with disregard for the broader ecological concerns. And to say that I can just take these two generations at once and not worry about it, not that that's actually going to bring about any extinction, but that that's going to create a certain disregard in your attitude, and that's what the Torah is trying to prevent. You hear it? It's a fascinating idea. I think you could also take part of it. You don't have to take all of what he's saying. You could still put it within the context of the overall Rachmanis consideration and simply say that when one is taking the bird. So there is a requirement that you also preserve the merciful instinct within yourself and recognize that, yes, you are eating an animal, you're availing yourself of an animal for your own purposes, but that should come with a recognition that there is a mother to this animal. The animal is a living thing, and therefore you should feel a obligation towards that. It shouldn't just be as if this was created in a lab out of nowhere and there's no issue here. Well, there is an issue, but in the context of your being allowed to do this, is the requirement is that you should also have an appreciation that there is a living thing involved that has a mother that feels pain, that is also a part of it. And we also discussed when we talked about Shechita on day one of the year, that it's interesting if we assume, like the majority of the Rishonim do, that Shechita is there to prevent Tzar Balei Chaim, that you should kill the animal in the most painless way. So, as some ask, it doesn't seem to be consistent, because we don't require that whenever an animal is killed, for any reason, it has to be with Shechita. So if we're so concerned about the suffering of the animal, so why is it only in this context that it has to be shechted? So as we discussed then, it could be there is a trade-off there, that it's not the case that the Torah always requires that level of sensitivity. But together with somebody who's actually eating the meat of an animal, so it's more important that that has a parallel sensitivity to, if you're going to do that, then at least do it in as painless a way as possible. But it's the other side of the Chiddush of saying that you can eat the animal in the first place, is that there needs to be an extra corresponding sensitivity. And maybe that's also true here, that specifically in the context of taking the animal to eat for your own purposes, so then there is an obligation to be sensitized to the living aspect and to the maternal relationship. Make sense? By the way, I mentioned to you the other day that the Zayim L'Mishpat, the Lutzke Rav, has that extra spin on it. That the idea that the mother is acting in a protective fashion. That normally, any bird that you approach is going to fly away. So why is the mother even vulnerable here? She's vulnerable only because she's going to stay to protect her children. And that's where it exposes itself to being taken. So the mitzvah of the Torah here is, don't exploit that maternal protection. Don't say, okay, now you're forced to stay here because I'm attacking your children, I'll take you also. And we know that among the most evil acts that terrorists do sometimes, as if it wasn't evil enough already, sometimes there's a second bomb. If a bomb, Rahmana Lutzlan, at the place, and it does damage, and then sometimes they're planning an attack right after that, so that when the first responders come, they will go after them, which is an unbelievable level of achzarius. Not only are you trying to kill innocent people, but then you'll also try to kill out for the people who come to save the innocent people. So, a very different level here. Maybe the idea, just at a core level, to say that, oh, I will exploit the fact that the mother is trying to save the children and take that as an opportunity to go after the mother, that's particularly egregious. So that idea I mentioned is in the Zayim L'Mishpat, it's actually in a lot of Svarim, it's based on earlier sources as well. There are many who have that idea that it's also about exploiting the mother's protective instinct. So maybe all of that fits in to various perspectives on the mitzvah. But it's also interesting that, as we mentioned, so this affects how things happen today. So today, almost nobody is interested in taking the eggs from a bird directly. So this mitzvah only comes up if you believe it's something to pursue in and of itself. And there is a tradition that there's a skula involved, the medrash like that, the skula for having children. So there are people who seek after this opportunity. And that's a part of the whole machlokes that we saw here, is that kedai to do? Or, like the Chassam Sofer would say, is it kedai rather to leave it alone? And should we say that it's achzarius? And if you're looking for the school of a long life, etc., so then kibud av ve'em is the better focus. We also have that promise. But a part of the complexity here is sometimes you'll find that people will discover that they have a nest in their house. And they'll say, oh, okay, here's an opportunity to perform the mitzvah. And they'll invite their neighbors over, they'll invite people over to come do this. And if you're coming from a Chassam Sofer perspective, so then for sure this is objectionable, because here you have basically what would amount to an ongoing torture of the mother, having it be sent away by everybody who wants to come do this. But there's also a big technical problem. What's the technical problem? Can you figure out what the technical issue is? So the Gemara indicates that if you had a chance to, maybe actually, I meant to put this in the list. So the Gemara says that there is an exemption for Shiluach HaKan if it is Mezuman. So what does Mezuman mean? So Mezuman only means to be prepared. In this context, it sounds like it means, and this is a subject of discussion, that's why I'm saying it vaguely, that, let's say, if the nest and the bird is already in your house, or if it's on your property, so then that is an exemption from Shiluach HaKan. So that creates a big problem for this scenario, where you happen to find a nest in your basement or the like. Because once it's in your house, it would seem like it's subject to the exemption of Mezuman. So what should you do? So there is a lot of literature about this, and there are various suggestions how to get around the technical issue. So for example, some say you should be mafkir, the area where it is. Or you should be mafkir, the bird. And then it won't be yours. So the whole question is a little funny, right? Because you're coming from already the perspective that maybe there was no mitzvah to begin with. And now we're saying for an additional reason, it's already in your house. You already have it, so to speak. So for sure there should be no extra mitzvah. So then we'll go two steps beyond. We'll be mafkir, the area, so that we're not subject to this exemption, and then do something which is not clear we'd be obligated to in the first place. So already this whole scenario is a little bit complicated. But the question of whether Hefka would work in this situation is itself a big challenge. So if you're going to decide to declare something not yours when it's still in your house, and nobody else has real access to it, that's a real question. What are we being mafkir? Being mafkir the nest? So then the house may automatically reacquire it because it's inside your house. Kinyan chatzer. And you're going to be mafkir your house. You really mean it. And you're going to be mafkir the windowsill where it is. Is that the issue? So all of that is very questionable whether any of that works. So Rav Asher Weiss, for example, he dismisses this whole possibility, and he says that ultimately there's no real model for Hefker here to make a difference. And he says it's just a game, and he says don't even compare it to Mechiras Chametz, which is much more real, and that's a whole other topic. Guys know I like to talk about it in a different context. But here, this wouldn't have any real impact. And he emphasizes the phrase mezuman, which is the topic of discussion. So that's not tied into ownership. That's tied into it being accessible to you. If the bird is already protected, is already on your in your house, so then it's an exemption, whether or not you own it. So the whole connection to ownership is that maybe it extends to ownership. So if, let's say it was outside your house, but on something that you own. there might be an exemption. But inside your house, whether you own it or not, you thought there would be an exemption. So he thinks this whole plan is very difficult for a lot of technical reasons. Interestingly enough, there's a sefer that came out a little while ago from the Shiurim of Rav Salman Nechemi Goldberg called Nesiv Mitzvotecha. And there, his conclusion is a little hard to know exactly what his conclusion is on the question of, is there a mitzvah to do it regardless of taking the bird? That there he discusses the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer focused very much on the reasoning behind the mitzvah, and it'd be achzarius to send it away if you're not interested in the children. So for that reason, primarily, the Chassam Sofer worked off the position that it's not something to do. So it sounds like Rav Zalman Nechemia didn't land that way, because ultimately we can't take the reason of the mitzvah into deciding the halacha of a mitzvah min haTorah. But then once he seemingly comes to that conclusion, he says that if it's in your house, he says nowadays he thinks there's no p'tur to begin with. That the p'tur of it being in your house, that was in the time of the Gemara, where somebody would have wanted to have such a bounty, have these eggs be in his house. So therefore, the kinyan chatzer and the reality of it being in your house would acquire it for you. But nowadays, people don't want these things in their house. Who wants a bird inside his house? Who wants a nest inside his house, all dirty and unhygienic? So therefore, the average person would not want it to be acquired. So therefore, to the extent that it is acquired, it's not going to actually take effect. Because just like if something should fall into your house that you don't want, let's say chametz on Pesach. So if you have little crumbs that you tried to get rid of, and there's just a little crumbs left, so we say that's batel because we're not interested in that. So too, if the wind would blow a crumb into your house on Pesach, so we wouldn't say that your house is konedak because you don't want it. So too, you wouldn't say that by the bird's nest, and therefore, that's also not going to be acquired. He says the whole p'tur doesn't apply, so it's the opposite perspective. That's an interesting range of views. So, okay, so we'll stop here. God willing, tomorrow we'll start the Kisvei Adam. May say a word or two extra about the Shiluach HaKan. But then hopefully we'll get to start the Kisvei HaDam and to move from there into our final week. All right, so I wish you all a safe and healthy day. Should be only good things. And God willing, I will see you tomorrow.
Thank you, Abby.
All right, Yashikar. Bye-bye.